Hello, and welcome to Humans of Van Life, the most raw, authentic, and diverse podcast made on the road. I am Nikki, and I'll be your host. Join me in the rolling studio while we hear how people have diverted from society's idea of normal and made their lives on the road. Thank you so much for being here. Hey, you guys, before we dive into the next episode, I wanted to jump on here and tell you guys some exciting news, and that is I created a Patreon account. If you haven't heard of Patreon, that's no problem. It's a platform where people can support the creators that they love and listen to. To find my Patreon account, head over to the link in my Instagram bio, at The Humans of Van Life, or type in www.patreon.com/thehumansofvanlife. Hello and welcome back to Humans of Van Life. Today I am podcasting with Jeremy, who is in Florida.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So can we just start off by like just telling me a little bit about what you've done these last couple months? Because I only know bits and pieces.
Okay, cool. All right, so on April 22nd of this year, of 2019, I embarked on a journey of a lifetime. April 22nd was the day that I walked off of the Brooklyn Bridge and started my trek across America, 3,100 miles from the Brooklyn Bridge all the way to the Sundial Bridge in Redding, California. And I did it. I did all of it except for the last 500 miles. 100% unassisted, meaning I had no support vehicles. I had, nothing. It was me and a 52-pound pack for 178 days, which is 6 months. And I had a very different route. I walked off the bridge and I actually walked up to Niagara Falls first. That was an extra 600 miles out of my way, but I didn't want to leave New York without seeing Niagara Falls, and I thought it would be awesome to be like, hey, raise your hand if you walked here. I thought that would be cool, right? So I did it. I was like, yeah. And then I went up to Niagara Falls. I went from Niagara Falls down to Oklahoma City, from Oklahoma City up to, and then I scaled all three Rocky Mountains through Colorado, over Highway 50, and then from there into the Northern California to the Sundial Bridge. And I did this, A, as a challenge for myself, and B, to be able to raise money for an anti-bullying campaign through Fight for the Forgotten, which is Justin Wren's foundation, and he's a professional UFC fighter. And his foundation was, started to help out the Pygmies, the Batwa Pygmies, to collect water, and then it turned into a worldwide bullying initiative. And there was some bullying that was going on stateside, so they needed money, and so I figured that would be a great cause to do. So that's what I did. That's where we'll start out.
That's incredible. So 6 months with a backpack on your back and a passion.
Yeah.
Now I'm just so curious. Yeah. Why were you like, this is the foundation that I'm fighting for? Like, this is what I'm choosing to dedicate my time to. Did you have any like personal experiences with bullying, or why was it so close to your heart?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. I grew up, I still deal with this, but it's very manageable now. But anybody that knows me knows my story. I've had really super bad Tourette and stuttering. And so when I was growing up, it was so bad. You know, I would, I had all these vocal tics. You know, I said I had, one of them was Huey. Oh my God. Don't ask why. I've got no idea, but I would just say Huey before, during, and after every single word. And I would, hit the bottoms of my feet, and I stuttered really bad. I've been a professional drummer now for over 20 years. And so my mom, when I was 9 years old, my mom got me a drum set, and I used to sit behind my drums. And I would sit behind my drums, and I would, when I was 9 years old, and I would play pretending like my drums were people at school. So like I would be the snare drum, and then like my toms were kids, and I would just have conversations like, you know, and for the first few years, it was just like speaking, right? And then, so imagine growing up in like a really small town in Northern California. I had hair, I was a rocker kid, you know, so I had hair down to my ass and two earrings and stuttered and was like, so you could probably imagine, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because I went to school with all the cowboys and shit, mm-hmm. right? But believe it or not, the most of what I endured, it was what it was during high school or during school, but it was really bad in my 20s after high school, when I actually started getting more into my early adulthood. You know, so it was something that I had battled for a while. And then when I was in my late 20s, I was studying at the Seattle Drum School. I found a mentor who I didn't know, but he was going to alter the course of my life forever. And he offered to mentor me and to start teaching at the Seattle Drum School. And I turned it down. I said, no, I can't. I mean, thank you for offering to teach, but you know, you got to have a Berkeley grad. And I was like, I told him, I was like, I'm in special ed. I can't learn. There's no way. I'm not smart enough. I can't do it. And he was like, nope, I'm going to make you do it. And so he mentored me. And fast forward a year later, not only did he put me through his program and everything, fast forward a year later, I was transcribing whole entire albums. I was doing studio work. I started teaching. And then I got up to about 30 to 40 students a week. My drumming career took off, and I was touring all over the world. So is what happened was I started doing these camps for kids, and I decided that I wanted to, you know, give back and really mentor other kids. And then I saw, you know, how those kids were struggling with like self-esteem and bullying. And then I moved my studies online. And then when I moved to New York, I started helping out for this mentally and developmentally disabled foundation that uses music for healing. They're called Daniel's Music. Mm. I'm sorry, here. Whoops, how rude. Somebody's calling me. So I started seeing, you know, just like how the gift of that I could use with my drumming to be able to build people up. And I decided that's what I wanted to do, was to be able to return the favor of mentoring like that. So every year I pick a cause to raise money for. And so I literally heard talking on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he was talking about how he was making this anti-bullying campaign. And he talked about his story and about him being bullied. And as soon as he was done, as soon as I heard that podcast, I emailed him, and I was like, hey, I'm in New York City right now. I'm about to give up my apartment in April, and I want to walk across the country, and I'm looking for a foundation to raise money. And so he and his wife called me, and they're like, okay, well, what do you want from it? Like, what do you want? And I was like, I don't want anything. I'm going to raise the money for you guys. I want to raise, you know, $20,000, $30,000, however much I can get, I'm going to raise it. And so I don't really think of that he believed me, but then he and I talked, and he learned my story. We actually became good friends. Mm. And then he knew it was on. He lived in Oklahoma. When I walked to his freaking house, I like knocked on his door. I was like, what's up?
Holy shit. And he was like, this guy means business.
Yeah, that's like the premise of why I decided I was going to do that. And then throughout my journey, I collected stories of this bullying and stuff, you know, like throughout the United States. And I've collected that, and I'm going to put those in the journal in my book. You know, I talked to the father of a young lady in Ohio. We were at a coffee shop, and I talked to the dad of an 11-year-old who hung herself because her social media friends told her to. And then I talked to another I met this lady named September Brown Brooks. If she's listening, what's up, September? She told me about how her son was bullied really bad and they pulled him out of school. He was in eighth grade, and 2 weeks after they pulled him out of school, he got diagnosed with leukemia, and it was aggressive and it died. And so she felt that he died without any sort of redemption. You know, like no kids like reached out to him and said that they were sorry. So his story is actually fascinating. He was the first Oklahoman buried in space. She got his ashes cremated and put on a rocket, and they shot it up in space, and it orbits the Earth every 97 minutes for the next 60 years. And while I was talking to her, she has this thing on her phone. She's like, "Hey, Greg is up above us, and he has a monument there in Tulsa, and I went into the Museum of Flight. I got to see his stuff." And so she wrote me his story, so she gave me permission to write about him.
Wow. Holy shit. I'm so glad we're having this conversation right now, because I think that, believe it or not, still, there's an idea that bullying is not even that bad. Yeah. It's like a rite of passage, you know, like these sort of things, like Frosh Week, for example. It's a rite of passage when you go to university, and it's not a fucking rite of passage at all. And these stories that you're sharing are serious. These are real people, real families. This is, you know, and I don't know what the statistics are, but I did know when I was studying about, you know, like, it's like, I think it's 1 in 3 kids are severely bullied in their lifetime for school.
Well, here's a real life statistic. Are you ready for that? So check this out. In the U.S., every single day, over 100,000 kids U.S.-wide skip school. Every single day, 100,000 kids skip school because they feel not that they're just getting bullied and they're wimpy kids. They literally feel unsafe. They feel unsafe. And that's over 1 million school days every year. Lost. And here's the thing: is bully it. To get bullied, it is a way of life. It's always going to happen. It's all like that. But the thing is we live in different times now, to where, when I was young, you know, it's like I would go and I get picked on, and then I'd come home, and it stopped because it wasn't social media. Now imagine, like, if I was in social media, right? You know, didn't some people be like, "Oh yeah, what's up? You know, stuttering fucking Tiki Tourette. Dude, like, thinks he's gonna be a badass drummer. What a loser! Fuck you, go die!" Right? Or some, you know, that. And I would be, as like a teenager, I'd be reading that on social media, and it's this constant bombardment. And is what happens is, like, I feel like when we're younger, not for everybody, but there was a more of a playing field of there being like equal of, like, you know, you could go and get beat up, and then you could go and you could feel love. So there's a little bit more of a balance of good energy and bad energy. Now, if there's a TV on in your house, it's all hate and vitriol. If there's social media going on, it's all hate and vitriol. A lot of the music is overly aggressive. Everything is just bombarded, and we're at the sensory overload now, where it's like, how the hell are these kids supposed to cope unless people like me and Justin and people from organizations take a stand and actually stand up and do something to be able to help people feel better about themselves and get confidence.
Totally. And, like, just like you said about social media, you can't escape it, because what's the first thing most people do before they go to bed? They scroll social media. What's the first thing they do when they wake up? They scroll social media. So you're constantly, constantly, it's like wedging its way in, like, your subconscious, you know, and your conscious. Mm-hmm. And over time, my God, you know, like, that takes a bloody toll on you. Just like you said, it was 100,000 kids, you're saying? A year?
Yeah. Yeah. A day.
A day. Sorry, a day.
Every day. Every day, 100,000 kids in the U.S. skip school.
Wow.
I walked off that bridge. You know, I didn't really have a. This is what I was literally just writing this line in my. I'm writing the script for my film right now. My film is just. It's going to be short film, like 10 minutes, and it's going to be a prelude to my book. And I was saying how I didn't have a plan when I walked off that bridge. My only plan was to make it to the other side alive and to be able to raise awareness for my cause, you know? So it's like, I didn't have a route planned out. Prior to this, I had never even done an overnight backpacking thing by myself. And I got rid of everything that I owned. I had a beautiful apartment in this really awesome part of Brooklyn. I got rid of my apartment, my van. I had three really epic drum sets. You know, I had a legendary snare drum from the 90s, you know, that was played on by the Pearl Jam guys and Soundgarden guys, and so I had all of this stuff. I got rid of every single thing that I owned except for what I fit in my backpack and my phone. That was literally the only possessions that I had when I left.
Wow. And so what about now then? So, because you're finished, do you have a home now?
Yeah. No. My coaches are letting me stay here at their beautiful place here in Orlando. You know, and so I'm gonna just, you know, I'm just gonna hustle and get. So the cool thing is I started a coffee company while I was out on the road. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I had like so many of these epic adventures, like, you know, I fell off a 40-foot cliff. I woke up with coyotes surrounding me, you know, at one time. I got caught in a flood. I got caught in a lightning storm. I set up my tent right across the street from a prison, and there was a prison prison escape at night. They told me not to leave the tent. So while it's 3 o'clock in the morning and there's like search helicopters and all of this stuff, I'm literally across the street, and then my phone starts going off because there's a tornado and a flood coming right at me. So I write about all of these adventures that I had, and I put it on the back of my coffee, right?
What?
This is my coffee company, and I put it on the back. I put all these adventures. This one is called the Prison Break Blend, and 100% of the profits go to charity. And so now it's like you can pick these ones go to Fight for the Forgotten for the anti-bullying, but now all the new flavors that I have go to you can pick the charity of your choice. We've got like Children's Hospital. There's a charity to help out kids with school lunch. There's Jan Edwards, who was from here. She's a good friend of mine. She's she's about to be a Florida senator. A Florida governor. She has a human trafficking one. And so you could pick whatever one you want, and all the money goes to that. So I did that. I built that while I was out on the road, literally just like did the website and everything with my thumbs, right? You know, wrote all of that stuff while I was out on the road. So I literally have that, and then my speaking gigs. That's the only thing I'm doing for money.
Wow.
That's it.
And so I want to ask you,
yeah,
do you miss any of your old stuff? Do you miss that? Like, do you miss your house and all your possessions?
No. You know, it's funny you asked that, because I was just saying, I did this walk solo. Like I said, you know, there was a few people doing this walk right around the same time that I was, and they, you know, they had support vehicles and whatnot, and that's fine, but I would go weeks without speaking to anybody. I would take my headphones out. So I was like, in the middle of nowhere. Imagine walking 4 days and not seeing a car, right? And like you're in the Oklahoma panhandle and you haven't seen a car for 3 days, and you haven't even seen blacktop. It's just freaking dirt road and oil fields. And there's nothing. So you haven't heard a sound, nobody to talk to, nothing, right? So this change happens inside of you. And so by the time I got to the Sundial Bridge, it's like I shed all of this new skin. It's such a new me. It feels like so refreshing and so new to know this. It's almost like I'm like every day I'm waking up and hanging out with a new person that I never even knew existed. Not only do I not miss any of the stuff, I have no desire for it. You know, it's like, I mean, my career has been awesome. You know, I played in heavy metal bands and I was part of the Seattle grunge scene. I got up in Seattle in the 90s and played all of that. And I don't even listen to that music anymore, man. It's like the music that I listen to now completely changed over the walk. Everything, I don't know, it's completely different. But no, it was, when I was getting rid of it, I was like, oh my God, how can I get rid of this drum set? How can I get rid of this? It's any of it. It's a trip.
Oh my God.
Not one bit. I don't even think about it.
You know, you're giving me shivers. Yeah. Like, this conversation lights me up because you just said shed, right? You shed your fucking skin. You had 6 months. And I talk about this a lot on this podcast because a lot of people, they don't even go 24 hours without having somebody to talk to, somebody telling them what to do, a green light, a red light, a TV, you know, and you said days and hours and months, and you got to be with yourself, you know, you listen to your thoughts, you would have had to meditate through it, you would have had to, you know, push through the discomfort and absolutely you shed into this new being. I love what you're saying about like getting stoked to wake up with this new you and like spend time. It's amazing.
Because let me put it to you like this, okay? So this is something I literally just wrote about. I have this, you know, this discovery that I made. You know, so I've been very fortunate, you know, to have, I mean, it's almost impossible to be a full, you know, on professional drummer like that. Like that's, I mean, what are the odds, right? Everybody wants to be real for almost 20 years. So my entire life, that's been my identity. You talk to anybody that knows me, right? Ever since I was really little, oh yeah, Jeremy, the drummer. So, and I practice, you know, 8 hours a day, you know, did I like 30 students a week and drums, that's it. So everything that I have done in my life has been based around drums. When I moved to New York City, I already had a group of students there, everything. So I'm moving through life and so I had this idea like, okay, yeah, you know, I want to walk across America and stuff. And I had this huge fear when I started because I was like, man, this feels so unauthentic because I was like, who the fuck do I think I am? Like, I was like, you know, I'm not MacGyver. I'm not like an adventurer dude. You know, I'm not like these. I'm like, man, if I do this and I fail, I'm going to look like a total phony. And I'm like, oh man. So, so I was like, you know, the only way that I can do this is if I just completely shit. I just completely, like, what if I got rid of every single thing, like, and wasn't attached to anything and just gave it a try. And it's what happened is I had this vision of what I was like, you know, I'm 46 years old. I wonder if I could, you know, I wonder if I could just be like, oh, I'm going to be something else. Like, that's kind of a fantasy, right? Like, I'm going to just be this. And I walked, like when I said I walked off of this bridge, one Jeremy, and I walked into the bridge, and it didn't have anything to do with drumming. I wasn't already a professional, you know, I wasn't a millionaire that had like all of these fucking hookups and stuff like that. I did it. And I was like, oh my God, I'm this new thing. And so now I'm like, oh shit, I'm about to be an author, like a real published author. And like, oh man, and so I have like this, you know, this whole new rebirth. And I feel like the more you become an adult, the more it seems impossible to be able to do that. So I want to be able to be an inspiration for other adults to be like, you know, you don't have to be pigeonholed, and you don't have to be trepidatious about going out and being something else. You could make up whatever you want to be in your mind and speak, I'm gonna be that. Just confidently go for it. Isn't that cool?
That is cool is an understatement, my friend.
Right.
Cool, isn't it? Yeah. That is fucking powerful and so important. Like, I a lot of people, yeah. Like, I predominantly talk to people who are nomads, who, you know, who live life on the road just as you did, but often in yeah. vans. And it's always like the same topics come up time and time again. And there's this idea of pulling away from who we think we ought to be and stepping in who we truly want to be. You know, right. And it's kind of like, when you're on the road or when you're out connecting with community or you're closer to nature, you're able to be who you want to be and show up just yeah. as you are. You don't need to put on a mask or, because, like, you know, only 10% of what we do is from our conscious. 90% is from right. our subconscious. So when we've been marinated right. in a society that tells us that, you know, you're a drummer and that's all you are, we take it on as a full-on identity. Subconsciously, we're not leaving room for us to step up or shed into other layers of ourselves. And you're right, at any right. age, you can yeah. do that.
Yeah, you know, and that's another thing, you know. It's like, I've been nomading since 2016, you know. I lived up in Seattle, and I went through this really brutal divorce. I like lost everything, and I had like a brick and mortar music school there, and so I lost. And so when I had to shut everything down, I was like, oh my god, what am I gonna do? And then my students were like, well, let's just do it online. So I actually moved to Southeast Asia, to Thailand, and I bring my practice pad, you know. It's like, I've got my practice pad right here. and I had it literally set up on the beach, and like the time zones are just like flipped, right?
Yeah.
So I would just be like, I'd get to the beach like really early, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, so it's like 5 in the evening there, right? And I'm freaking doing drum lessons there. And I'm like, oh, and that's when it dawned on me. I was like, oh, I could be this digital nomad. And then I was like, okay, cool. Now I'm going to build my life out of it, right? You know, so, you know, the more you start to make wins in that, the more you can, like, Tim Ferriss talks about lifestyle design, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Everybody in the van life community is very much aware of that. You know, so it's like, van life had me prepared for like the nomading aspect, but, you know, or like the constant being on adventure. I really liked that, but that got me in the right mindset. And then, you know, the walking was just, you know, a whole different thing, you know, because, you know, it takes, I was averaging about 15 to 20 miles a day, like 15 at the least, maybe 20, 23, 24 during the day with a 52-pound pack. And that would take about 11 hours to walk.
So what were you eating? Like, how did you fuel yourself?
Oh man, yeah, dude, that was hard. You see, I was only able to carry 3 days worth of water and no more than worth of food. I mean, I had a 50 liter pack. You know, so it's like, you know, a gallon of water is what, 8.5 pounds, right? You know, so it's like, as it got hotter, right, you know, like your pack just gets really heavy. So food, you know, you have to be very selective. And you know, I've always been a very healthy eater. I've never eaten, well, not never, but I don't eat fast food. It's not in my thing. So I had to be very creative. So I ate a lot of, if I don't ever eat fucking canned fish again, that's okay. But like by the end of it, I was like, rah! I was just like throwing it down, and I was, you know, just grumpy about it. But yeah, a lot of like canned fish, a lot of just like you know, I had my jet boil was the only cooking thing that I had that lasted my entire 3,000 miles. Wow. So I would have soups, canned fish and all that. But here's how the funny thing is, I ran out of food and water well over a dozen times. But you know, I never ran out of coffee once. Isn't that funny?
That's amazing.
If I die, they're gonna find me with a pound of coffee.
No food, no water, but you got coffee.
Yeah, and sometimes that's the only thing I'd have for breakfast, right? Mm-hmm. You had to get clever, and you go to like a Walmart and get, like, instead of, if you got a jar of peanut butter that's really heavy, you can get those little packs.
Yes.
You know, they have like those little single serving packs, right? So you get that. You know, you'd get an apple, cut up the apples as quickly as possible. You know, you just gotta like really think outside of the box. Like, what can you have that you don't really have to refrigerate? And that's another thing too. After living in Southeast Asia, you realize that Americans are hypersensitive about refrigerating everything.
Totally.
Because they don't refrigerate anything there. So, like, sometimes I would buy, like, a whole chicken and have it in my backpack for 3 days. And it worked out fine.
That's amazing. Yeah,
you know.
And when you were out there, like, did you meet anybody else? Like, did you meet any lifelong friends? Or, how was your experience on feeling lonely?
There, most of it was lonely. I met some really incredible people out on the road. That's one thing that my book is about. My book is about my whole entire journey. But if I was just to write it about one thing, it would be called The Good Deeds Diary of America. That's what I just kept on having because. You know, it seemed like all, just about every town that I went through, people went out of their way. They went out of their way to offer me food, to offer me water. A lot of times a place to stay. You know, we're bombarded here in America. We're bombarded with this. The TV, and we're bombarded with this. Dividedness. Okay, so I tell the story about how when I was about three weeks in, and I was going through Pennsylvania, and I was in the Pocono Mountains, and I walked through this back rural road, and I don't think anybody had ever walked down it before, and this farmer was out in his tractor, and he was looking at me, and he drove his tractor over, and he gave me some banter back and forth, and it wasn't anything offensive to me, because we were razzing each other. But he goes, I moved out here so I didn't have to see anybody with tattoos, right? And he had like this big Trump thing on his tail, and I was like, I said, yeah, man, I know what you mean, man. That's why I would move out here too, you know. So we were giving each other, you know, back and forth. He's asking like what I was doing, and he's like, oh. You know, yeah, you know, you're a musician from New York. Fast forward about 45 minutes later, I'm in his house sitting down eating with he and his wife. They ended up sending me down the road with $100 and a couple days worth of food. And I had that experience, you know, almost everywhere I went with complete strangers, you know, bringing me in without asking for any type of reciprocity, right? You know, without any expectations, and people just acting, you know, with love and kindness, and everybody acting as if they were a neighbor. So I was very blown away by that. I mean, when I was in Indiana, I got caught in a flood. I camped out next to the Ohio River, and the storm came in, and this freaking bridge snapped, and the Ohio River came, and it was flooding. The water was going so brutal. It was snapping trees in half, and when it hit me, it took all my gear away. And so I was getting washed away, and this guy drove down in this truck and saved me. And I was holding on to his truck and jumped in his truck, and he drove me up to high ground. And this guy drove me into town a day later and spent about $800 and got me new gear. And he didn't know me from anywhere, and he wouldn't allow me to Venmo him any money or nothing, and he just sent me on down another road. So, it was one thing that was a recurring theme in my walk. I would tell all of my followers, you know, that we're not as divided as what we're being told, because, you know,
yes.
It didn't matter if I was in the Bible Belt, the most conservative place. I had so many churches that let me stay in their places. It was incredible. It was just like incredible. I'll tell you, here's something listen to this. This is way incredible. I was panhandle of Oklahoma City, and it was about 110, and I'd just come into the small town. I mean, small town. And I'd been walking for 3 days, and I was in rough shape, but man, my feet were hurting so bad. And there was this this hotel that they used pretty much for truckers only, and there wasn't anybody in it. The lobby door was open, and it said, if you need a room, just call here, right? So it's what they use for, you know, all the truckers. It was a pretty nice hotel, but there was like a gas station, a post office in this hotel. So I called the lady at, I was like, hey, you know, I'm on foot, you know, I'm walking across America. And she's like, oh my God, I saw you on the news. I totally know who you are. And I was like, I need a room. You know, I've been sleeping out in the fucking middle of nowhere for the last 3 days. I'm in bad shape. I said, can I buy a room? She goes, open up the bottom drawer. She goes, go behind the desk, open the bottom drawer. Tells me, get out the keys. That was in the bottom drawer. Go into the room, grab a key, and she goes, "That's the key for your room." And I said, "Okay." I said, "How do I pay for it? Like, do I need to Venmo you or whatever?" She goes, "Oh yeah, no charge. Just put the key back tomorrow." So I went in there and I was like, "Yeah, thank you." I woke up on the next day and I was feeling really, really terrible. So I called her and I said, "I'm gonna buy 2 days. I want to. I'm gonna just stay another day. Thank you for letting me." Like that. She said, leave whenever you want. It doesn't matter. They didn't even come down there to meet me. Unseen anything. Like, complete stranger. And then, so I went to go leave, and I asked her if I could, I didn't have any cash. I said, is there a way I can send you, what is your email? Is there a way I can send you money? She said, I would rather you didn't. She said, because that, you know, there's no reason to. And she said, just, you know, thank you. She said, if you need anything, just call this number. We'll come and help you out. And I was so blown away by that, because, you know, being around cities and stuff like that, you know, you think everybody around is going to rob you and fuck you up.
Exactly.
And I mean, a stranger, I mean, I'm heavily tattooed, yeah. Right? You know, dude. Yeah. They didn't come check on me, nothing.
Just love and kindness.
And she told me, and where she told me where the keys were, there was a register back there.
And that is such a beautiful example. Like, that's humans. Like, you know, people, I love what you're saying about this division, because everybody, or so many people are, you know, like, oh, that's just typical society. It's just typical society. Well, actually, no, it's not. What you're experiencing, is love and kindness. That's where we're all, that's where we come from. That's what we know best.
Yeah.
You know?
You're right. It is our default setting. Listen,
yes.
You know, I come from a very extraordinary family. My grandpa was this Renaissance guy, and he was this traveler and everything. And, you know, he was a major male figure in my life. And I remember my grandpa telling me, they spoke about this at my grandpa's funeral, and he said, wherever you go, he's been all over the world. He said, wherever you go, people are the same, and most people are mostly good. It's just no matter where you go, you know, you know, it's like, you know, oh my God, don't go to Mexico. There's a blah, blah. There's, well, most people are mostly good. There's good and bad everywhere. Not to be like this, you know, this hippie naive thing. Of course there's bad, but you know what? We already hear about that. When you do this all by yourself, and I literally had two bad experiences that involved people. I had bad experiences every day ran off of the road. That's a whole different freaking topic, right? You know, and stuff, and being chased by dogs, and you know, and then being surrounded by coyotes, and you know, trying to keep alive from the wildlife trying not to kill me and all that. But every single day being you know, the times that I would interact with people, like I would be eating at somewhere. I had like this American flag on my thing. I'd be eating, and then I'd find like this old cafe, and I'd get up, and they're like, "Oh, hey, your meal's paid for. We saw you on the news. Thanks for doing what you're doing." And I'm like,
"Wow."
I'm like, "Yeah, all right. Thank you so much." So it was you know, it was pretty epic. And that's gonna be a very, you know, it's like, yeah, I walked out for the anti-bullying and everything, and that's pretty cool. The walk is pretty cool, but is what is fascinating to me more than anything is how the true spirit of kindness and community and camaraderie is still alive in America. I believe it's alive with everybody, but I'm just gauging across from my experience was through America, so that's what I can speak with.
So amazing, Jeremy. I can't wait to read your book. I'm really stoked to like just sit there and soak in more of your experiences.
It's gonna be pretty epic, you know. It's literally the hardest freaking thing, hardest thing that I'm doing. That's why I'm so thankful, you know, to be having my coaches, because they're professionals. You know, they've been the writing coaches for you know, literally thousands of authors and everything. I mean, that's literally like what they do. So it's going to be like a real book. If it was, you know, I mean, it's overwhelming, you know. It's like, you just, because I got, there's like so much stuff, and then you got to like order right, you got to do all of this shit, you know. And I'm so you know, I'm so energetic that's the last thing I want to do is sit down and write my book. I want to get out there and fucking play.
Right. Absolutely. I feel you there. I'm very much like that too. It's like my thoughts are everywhere. It's like, listen, I just got to get out and play. Yeah. Aw. So do you have any idea when your book might come into fruition?
I know it sounds lofty, but I really wanted it to be out, to be finished by February.
Wow. Amazing. So if people wanted to follow, they could just follow your social media to see when the book's coming out, or?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I discovered, this new thing that I discovered in my walk, was how you know, my new purpose in my life was to you know, I had this like this newfound spirituality come on me, and where I really believe that there was a point on my walk that I spoke to God, you know, and that's kind of like my personal thing. And so one thing that I got out of that was that I've decided that I'm gonna dedicate my life with the act of service. So I no longer want to do anything that is frivolous, that isn't that where the end result isn't in a way of giving back in one way, shape, or form. So right now, you know, like while I get the book done and all of that, that's why I have the coffee company, because every bag sold, you know, all the profits go to charity. I just spoke with I have a bunch of really great fans, and through this I had a fan contact me who has some money, and they're and right now I'm talking, I have a couple of business partners running this coffee company with me, and we are about ready to get some money to get two or three vans, and we're going to turn these vans into like a set of food trucks, into like coffee trucks, and they're going to be wrapped, and they're going to have my stories on them and stuff, and they're going to be like adventure vans, and we're going to go around to like the van life community, and like think about like these REI events and stuff, and we're gonna have it's gonna be community based, and we're gonna talk about like storytelling, and we're gonna do that. But we're gonna sell coffee out of the van, and every time somebody gets a thing of coffee, they pick which organization they want their purchase to go to, and it's gonna be this thing, and it's gonna be beans from the core. It's gonna be or beans for a cause. It's gonna, you know, have a fleet of vans driving around the U.S. To be able to do that, and I'm literally making that happen right now. So
that is incredible.
Is that cool?
I would love to, like, I don't know, when I'm finished with Australia, when I'm finished with my journey here, I would love to come down and be a part of that with you somehow.
Let's do it. You're invited. I can't wait. You know, I mean, I love house sitting this house and all. You know, it's got a pool and everything like that. I want to be in a. I love being in a van more than that sounds weird to like most like normal people. You know, like no matter how many millions of dollars I ever get or whatever, I would just have like a cooler van.
It ain't weird to us on this podcast. We know what you're talking about, honey.
Yeah.
I'm in a van right now. Actually, right? I don't know if you can see.
This
is a little van, the rolling studio.
I love it. Yeah, that's literally that's literally my plan. So grow that, you know, and then just keep on doing epic adventures and writing about them. But it was such a big goal, and I didn't know that I could do it. My confidence is just so, like, I really believe that I can do anything now.
Wow.
You know.
And that being said, I want to just like bring some open dialogue to the fact that life is so much about perspective. Like what you're saying there, that confidence, I believe that everybody can get there. Like, a matter of fact, I actively am working with people I meet along the road and helping them change their perspective because they can, you know, and that's all that changed within you is just a perspective. You betcha you're capable. You've always been capable. You can accomplish anything you put your heart to. But sometimes we need, you know, we need these epic journeys to show, to prove to ourselves. But the truth is, like, we are all capable of doing the grand things that we want to do. That's my belief, at least.
Yeah, you're right. And that, and you know, this isn't a new concept. They've talked about this since, since the beginning of books. You could read this. Could read that concept anywhere. The thing is for whatever reason, they don't teach that in fucking public school. So, you know, I grew up stuttering with the Tourette and everything. So I was in special ed. So when I got kicked out into the real adult world, they made me not forget. Like, don't you forget, like, you they said, listen. They said the only reason, my principal said, he my last name is Schultz, and he goes, Schultz, the only reason why you're graduating is because I'm not going to have a 20-year-old senior walking around my halls. You're 19. I had straight Fs. I'm not I was like, I don't know. Fucking school didn't make one bit of sense to me. I just wanted to play drums. That was fucking it. I'm like, I don't give a shit. I don't care. And so they made me just like, don't forget, you know, your limit, you know, you have, they put it in your head. You are special ed. You have these limiting beliefs and like that. So then you go into young adulthood and then you're like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, hey, Jeremy, do you want to teach at the Seattle Jones School? No way. I can't do that.
Exactly.
Because of XYZ. And then when there's a good mentor, he's like, no, that's bullshit. You can. And then you have to freaking prove it. And so that is what if anybody gets anything out of my walk, I want them to believe in themselves and then go spread that like a disease around to other people as fiercely as possible, because you know it gets so drowned out. You know, negativity and worry and fear is very loud.
Yeah,
it's very loud, but the truth the truth is always a way. You know, they say, so like, you know what the word Yahweh, you know what Yahweh means?
No.
You know what that is?
No.
Yahweh is literally, it's in the Bible, Yahweh talks about God's breath. That's Yahweh, right? So the truth is like, God's voice always speaks in whispers, right? So like, so lies and disbelief and worry is always loud and like that. So the truth, like everything is just in a whisper, right? So when it's, so it can, is what I'm saying, it can be, it's very, that's why it's so easy to miss. So being able to take a second and finding, that's why meditation is so important. That's why having some alone time is so important like that, is because when you do that, you hear Yahweh, and Yahweh comes in and into your soul and guides you.
Aww, I just love you. Yeah. I really do. You are precious.
Oh, thank you.
You are. I'm just so, I'm so grateful that you are not allowing fear to hold you back. Because when we allow fear to hold us back, we hold everybody else back as well. If fear held you back from your big journey, you wouldn't be able to be here right now sharing this story, sharing this wisdom. You know, and so it's like, for me, and my belief is we have a duty to choose love over fear. Because I have a duty and responsibility to be the best person I can to show up for myself and others. And that's what you're doing. And I fucking love it. I love it.
Yeah, well, I love that. That's a great attitude, you know, you have. And you know, I want to preface that by telling, you know, anybody that's listening to that is to not get it confused with not having fear, because I had so much fear going on that thing. I had fear. I had I had so many bad days. I mean, you know, it's like I told somebody. Somebody's like, "Oh, you know, are you walking back?" And I was like, "You know, it was mostly not fun, because I mean, I would walk. I walked over when I went through Missouri. I walked for 9 days in the rain in 100 degrees. I was freaking soaking wet. My feet were all over. But you know, I had made this this promise that I was going to do it. One of my personality flaws is I'm always the last person to quit anything. It's not the smartest thing, but I have a hard time quitting. I'm like, fuck, right?
Yeah.
So I could not, but I would be scared. I'd be like that. And so I would have to, like you said, that fear would come up, and then I would have to walk through it. I would have to like that. So just realizing that not only is it okay to have fear and all of that, but to know that that's actually part of the journey. That's part of it. That is part of it. So it has to be expected. You know, it's just like it's not realistic to expect peace on earth. That'll never happen, right? To know that going through life, there is going to be suffering. That's just part of it. So when you look at it as like, oh, instead of it knocking you off the rails, realizing, oh, that's what this is. Okay, cool. This part's going to suck. And then going through the suffering happily.
Yes.
Okay, well, fuck, here comes this 100 degree, you know, it's 100 degrees outside, and here comes a fucking wet storm for the next 9 days. And, you know, my bread's going to be soggy and everything. And just, oh, well. What are you going to do?
Jeremy, you're like, I'm getting emotional over here, because I relate with you fully. I relate with you fully, and I'm so happy you acknowledge that, because you're right. It's not just if you choose love, there's no fear. No, not at all. Of course it's going to be there. But it's how we allow it, how we show up with it, and how we navigate through it. Like, before, I'll just give you a small example. Yeah. Before this podcast, I was nervous as shit. This is only my second time doing this video call. So I'm like, what happens if, you know, the Wi-Fi kicks out this, that, and this? Yeah. And a couple times at the beginning of this conversation, I was thinking, I had my self-doubt come in. It was like, Nikki, you're not showing up. You're not connecting good enough. It doesn't sound good. Maybe you should just shut it off. And I kept pushing through, because I was like, no, hold on. I know I'm meant to be here. I want to be talking to Jeremy. And sure enough, here we are. And I'm out on the other side, you know? And so it's like, we're humans. Of course it's going to come up. We all have mental health, right? We all have a brain on our heads.
Yeah.
And it's how we navigate through that space. And I think it's so important to bring dialogue. Like, we're fucking human. Absolutely, we're going to have fear.
Yeah. Wow, that's so great. You're amazing. Thank you for you pushed through that and I want to acknowledge you for a second, because being able to have that rise up and then you be able to talk yourself through that, that's a skill that and correct me if I'm wrong, that can only be honed through practice. You actually have to practice that.
Oh, right? Man, you nailed it. Yeah, you betcha.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? So, that's one thing that I know, it's just, I was like, man, I'm not going through this. The only thing I've ever done was be a drummer and blah, blah, blah. And, and by all means, I do not take that as complaining. I mean, oh, poor me. I fucking played stadiums and toured all over. It's awesome. I live a rock star fucking life, right? But I was like, this new thing, what am I doing? Fucking yada yada. is what I didn't realize is like, is how much doing that prepared me for it's, when you get good at one thing, it'll oftentimes make you better at everything else, right?
Absolutely.
So that's a confidence trick that I tell people, like, what are you really good at? Nothing. I'm just a stupid accountant. Well, okay, whatever you did to be that, you can apply that same thing to be this thing that you think that you can't be. So perfect example, right? Practicing drums, I'd have to do a lot of monotonous repetition over and over, a lot, like, practice the same sticking, very slow, 4 or 5 hours at a time. And like, with your mind can't wander, cause you I have to do it with a click track, right? I got to do, all of a sudden I'm walking for 6 or 7 hours. I'm thinking like, this is exactly like practicing. So it's these skills that I had already mastered. And I'm like, fuck, bro, I'm already a professional fucking adventurer. I'm a professional that I'm just like, holy shit. So it's a technique. Yeah, it's a technique thing that anybody can use. We just have to practice it.
Absolutely. Oh,
isn't that cool?
That is so cool. Well, Jeremy, my computer's going to die, which is like hashtag van life at its finest. And so I just want to wrap this up here before, because it's really important to me that I want to save this before we lose all our beautiful content.
Yes.
And that's just simply that I am so grateful for the positive aspects of social media that allow this to happen. Like, I am so grateful we got the chance to sit here and share some space. And I know this is not going to be our last time. I have a feeling you and I are going to cross paths again and something, we're going to be doing some work together. But for right now, I'm just so grateful we got the opportunity to do this.
I believe that too. And listen, thank you for having me. A bunch of people in the van life community would watch my stories and they reached out to me and stuff. And, and so it meant a lot to me. So, and the ones that did that, whether they donated to me personally or to the cause or anything, if they're listening, I just want to say thank you, because that means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And so I hope to be able to pay it forward. And all of you guys, you included, come see me. Let's hang out. Let's have some fun.
Well, I'm ready for some coffee, in that van.
You guys follow me at Beats From The Core is my Instagram. My coffee is Beans From The Core, and the link to the website is on there if anybody wants to do that. And it's coffee that gives back, and you can pick whatever you want: children's hospitals, child trafficking, anything. Just go on there and check it out. And if you do, hit me up. Give me like a DM or whatever.
Amazing. And I'll make sure I include all your links in below, in the bio below, so people can follow you.
Thank you so much, Jeremy.
Wrapped up another beautiful episode here in the Rolling Studio. If you liked this one, please leave a written review on Apple Podcasts. And you know the drill.
every Tuesday. If you're not here, you're probably out to lunch.